Hello, everyone, and welcome to Answers News for January 26, 2022. I'm Roger Patterson, joined today by Rob Webb and Bodie Hodge.
Hi. Hi.
We are live down here in the Answers Center, lower level. We've got a fairly small audience today, but you guys can clap and make yourselves known for us.
Let's hear you. Come on. All right.
All right. All right. So we're glad to be here. It's kind of a cold day here in northern Kentucky.
It's pretty chilly.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you used to the cold weather yet?
Nope. I'm still frozen.
Still frozen?
I'm ready to go back to the desert.
Yeah, I think it was about 5 degrees this morning when
I
walked
outside.
Yeah,
it was like 6 degrees, I think.
Wind chill was well below zero.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's too cold.
So for those of you watching in tropical areas, enjoy it. Enjoy it for us.
70s, 80s, we're jealous.
Yep. So a few things to feature today as we get started. You should all be aware by now of our Answers magazine. It is an award-winning magazine. We feature this often here on the show, but we have a lot of us on staff write for the magazine, as well as other outside authors that come in with lots of different expertise. I would think of guys like Gordon Wilson, who do lots of things, animal features, amazing things, as well as the main magazine. We've got a Kids Answers that's got some exciting things coming up soon that we get to share with you very soon. But we hope you would think about subscribing to this. It's a great resource for you as parents to train up your kids of any ages, a great resource to use as homeschooling, to use in schooling of any type. If you've got older kids, use for Sunday school, use for any type of training like that.
Yeah.
Someone says aloha from Hawaii.
Oh, I bet it's warmer there than it is here.
Just got to rub it in.
That's right. Enjoy that.
Yeah. So if you are watching us, we're following along. I've got Ken Ham's page up. Following the comments there, you've got the Answers in Genesis page.
I'm waiting for it.
And Bodie's on YouTube.
I'm on YouTube right now.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a minute to populate, so we'll catch up with those things. But you can find out more at answersmagazine.com. Get that subscription there. We've got the print and the digital and combo packages available for those things. Great resource for your family there. And Answers TV, another great resource. Maybe some of you are watching us right now, or
Answers
TV.
Answers TV. On Answers TV. Mm-hmm.
So this is our new streaming platform. We launched just over a year ago, and this is a great resource for your family. We've got not just content from our ministry, lots of our speakers, conferences that we do, things like that, but also other ministries like Wretched and
Living Waters,
Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, that we've partnered with to bring you great content. So this is a place you can sit down with your family and be comfortable and confident knowing you're going to get good quality Bible authority teaching that you don't have to worry
about.
And how
much is it a month?
It's less than $40 a year.
Yeah, I mean, you think about
how
much you're spending on Netflix and Disney Plus and all these other streaming platforms, Answers TV, it's pennies compared to that.
Great.
And you actually get good biblical content. You can let it go. Your kids can watch it all day. You don't have to worry about what they're actually going to be seeing.
Yeah, we've got great programs, especially for kids. Recently, Peter Schremer's show Hike and Seek won an NRB award for Best Show of the Year. So that's a great program. I do a show. I put on my lab coat and I transform
Mr.
into
Mr. P.
And do fun science programming. Shoes Off.
Shoes Off is on. That's
Schulenburg.
A great show.
It's a great program. Great show. So all kinds of great content for you there. I encourage you to check that out. And of course, you can always check out back episodes of Answers TV there, or Answers News on Answers TV.
I can binge-watch Answers News.
You can binge-watch it all weekend
all
long.
All weekend long, yep. All right, so our first fun fluff story comes to us out of Colorado. A moose fell through a window into someone's basement, and wildlife officers had to tranquilize it and cut off its antlers to get it out.
Yeah.
So here we had a young bull moose who was grazing around the outside of this individual's yard here in Colorado in Breckenridge, and it fell down through a window well
and got trapped.
Broke through the window, got trapped in the basement, and they opened up the exits and tried
to get it out. I'm actually shocked it got in that way.
Yeah, me too. And they actually had to cut off the antlers to get it out, right?
Because apparently they opened the door to try to get it to go up the steps, and it
couldn't get
fit.
It to
they had to use their moosels to move it out.
Terrible pun.
Oh, my.
It was amusing.
It was
interesting. I was watching some of the comments on YouTube, well before we even started, and Wayne Baker said that this could potentially be a wild moose tail.
Yep.
So I was actually very impressed. I want to call that one out on
here. Roger's a hunter, right?
Yeah. I've had lots of encounters with moose, whether it's hunting or fly fishing in the willows, and you walk around the corner and there's a giant moose. These are massive creatures. I'm 6'6", so if I were standing next to a full-size bull moose, this is a younger younger bull, probably a yearling bull, and they'd be as tall as me at the withers, at the shoulder, and I wouldn't be able to see over his back. So these are big. The Shiras moose, this race of moose in the Colorado and the Rockies region, is the smallest moose race that we
have.
Just
to give you some size, we're talking about this, like we're saying it's 7 feet, 1,500 pounds, and that's small. Okay, yeah. Just to give you some size.
So if we went up into Alaska, the Yukon moose and the larger races, they get even bigger. And so this is
I actually ran into one of these, a mother moose, when I was living in Colorado for a while. My wife and I were camping up there, and we were fishing by the lake, and one of them comes strolling by. We're like, okay, what do we do? Do we just stand still? It's like, do we run?
Now, that's the most dangerous kind. The young bulls, when they're getting ready to mate, they can be a little angry and dangerous. But a cow moose with calves, that's the one you want to get as far away
from. We were on edge for sure. Yeah.
That's the time I was closest to death with a moose getting chased by a cow and a calf out fly fishing one time.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, the antlers would grow back, you know, even though they cut them off. People are like, oh, no, it lost it.
Typically fall off this time of year, but the moose will grow back new antlers in the spring, so no need to worry.
Don't have to worry about that.
Well, I'm sure that moose didn't like the basement either.
My daughter Katie, what is this place? My daughter Katie was talking about that. She was like, but they took off the antlers. Are they going to come back? And they will.
Every year. Yep. That's the difference between antlers and horns. Horns grow continually, but antlers in the deer family, they shed them every year and grow them back.
Yep.
That's the fastest growing tissue in mammals, is the antlers of elk and moose grow back massive amounts of tissue every year. Little fun facts that weren't even in.
All right.
Our first story today takes us to genetics. Huge project is now underway to sequence the genome of every complex species on Earth. Now, just a decade ago, this is something that was literally a pipe dream, something we wouldn't even be able to consider. But now, with advances in technology and sequencing, all these genetic codes of every species is now a real possibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these individuals are working on this as a team project. And the idea is that they're going to take the genetic codes of all the different species, and they're looking at complex organisms, what we think of as the eukaryotes, those with a true nuclei,
structures. Even though single-celled organisms think they're actually very complex.
Yeah,
They're not as simple as they thought.
So looking at all of these, the first phase of this is going to take about 9,400 individual species that will represent all of the different families of the eukaryotic grouping of individuals by the end of 2022, and then carry on from there. Mm-hmm. So this is a very ambitious goal.
Right, I think all total it was about 1.8 million.
1.8 million described species that they want to go through over the next 10 years, and it's ramping up. So talk about a lot of work.
That's right. And you know what? This is actually neat research. We're able to map all that, have access to that in databases. Yeah. You know, we have some geneticists on staff here at the Ministry of Answers and Genesis. And, you know, I think they would be absolutely excited to dive into some of this research.
A lot of cool science, a lot of hard work, you know, that, and it just shows off God's awesome design and creation. And part of our dominion mandate is to be able to better understand these species and we
just have to be careful of the evolutionary storytelling.
Right, exactly, because they talk about how the biodiversity can be protected, which is, you know, of course, very important, but there's also a lot of storytelling in here. They talk about the reasons why they're doing it are not the biblical reasons why we would want to do this, why we would want to study these species.
And as they do this, of course, one of the main goals of most of these groups is going to be to understand the evolutionary connections between all of these organisms. Now, from a biblical standpoint, we can appreciate a lot of those connections. When we get down to the family and genus and species level, that could help us understand what we would think of as the biblical kinds. Right. And that the information could be very helpful.
So when we talk about kinds, it's typically around the family level, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that could help us really distinguish some of those things.
Of course, right.
And when we get up to the higher levels, looking at the order and those levels, we might be able to see some very clear distinctions that would say, okay, these are definitely different kinds of organisms from the biblical perspective. So this data will certainly be helpful to us as creation scientists to be able to look at and understand how God created all these organisms. The other thing they bring up in here is looking at the sequences that were previously called junk DNA, things that we've known forever.
God doesn't make junk DNA.
Yeah, every time they mention this junk DNA, it's actually something useful. It's actually God designed it for a reason, so it's not actually junk. So when you read that,
So this is going to be great research. Looking forward to see what comes out of this and how.
Yeah, it says here about 44 institutions in 22 countries will be working on it. So there's quite a few people involved in it. So It's kind of a neat
Split
neat
the variation between species to make comparisons, what they say at the end here.
Yeah.
And that's what we see, variation within a given kind.
Right.
All right, our next story. When they warn of rare disorders, these prenatal tests are usually wrong. So we've known that we can test individuals who are pregnant. I should say women. I almost sounded woke there for a second.
Watch
we can
out.
Test women oh, who are pregnant.
Oh, I mean, in today's society, I mean.
Well, I didn't mean to phrase it like that at all. We can test women who are pregnant using various techniques since the 70s and 80s through processes that we think of as invasive, like amniocentesis and chorionic villi sampling, where you can take a piece of the tissue from the fetus or from the amniotic fluid in those areas, and we can sample that and look for things like that would help us to determine the sex of the baby, look for genetic disorders, but they run the risk of causing things like miscarriage and other issues with the pregnancy. So they've developed tests now that we think of as non-invasive neonatal testing, and that would help us to be able to identify these things. So they take a blood sample from the mother, and they try to extract out cells that are the fetal cells that have crossed into the mother's body. And then they test those blood cells and try and look for chromosomal issues and other things that will help them identify any potential problems.
And that's the test we're looking at here.
Yeah, right. That's the test we're examining here.
Right.
Those non-invasive tests during the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they'll test for all sorts of different rare disorders.
Right.
And, you know, just looking at this, I think they said, just right off the top here, about 85% of the time, it seems
85% of the time they're wrong. Yeah, they're only right 15% of the time. So this has devastating consequences, because the problem is a lot of the times when they find these problems, the doctors are automatically trying to say, you know, they're going to have this type of life, so maybe you should consider, you know, going through with the abortion. They say terminating a pregnancy, but really that's just code for murdering the child, because that child made in the image of God from the moment of fertilization is deserving of life. So really, no matter what the diagnosis is, I think the clear point we want to make here is it's never an option to murder that child, no matter what the diagnosis is. Even if it is, even that child maybe has Down syndrome or has one of these other problems that they're trying to screen for, that's never a reason, because that child is made in the image of God, as it says in Genesis 127.
Yeah.
127 from the Psalms even says that they're blessings from the Lord, they're gifts from God. They're fearfully and wonderfully made. Jeremiah 1:5 says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you." So God knows every child's name.
Right.
No child is ever a mistake. No child is ever an accident. God does not make mistakes. So that's what we should really be trying to focus on when we're trying to read these kind of articles.
Yeah, so this non-invasive prenatal testing has been helpful in identifying and very productive in identifying the sex of the baby and finding things like Down syndrome and a few other
things.
That's
what it's fairly accurate on.
It's been very accurate for. But then these companies have recognized, okay, if we can find this, then maybe we can find this and we can find this. And the article exposes some of those and dives into the money factor involved here. And it seems that a lot of these companies have been very profitable
right.
using these tests.
And so they start using it, you know, trying to determine, you know, things like Prader-Willi syndrome and other things like that.
Increase their
and in that case, it was 90% inaccurate. So,
you know,
as you start looking at these different ones, they're over and over again. They're just incorrect. They're just off. I mean, once in a while, they get a correct result, but... Yeah.
And so that's not to downplay that these tests can have their benefits, right? It can prepare the parent for what they're going to have, you know, when the child is actually born. So that's not to downplay it, though. But at the same time, it could have devastating consequences, like we're seeing.
And a lot of these, the stories that were given in this article, were very devastating. Now, all of these stories come from a very secular perspective. And one of the sad things brought out in these is when these women receive these diagnoses, they were told, okay, there's a 99% chance based on this blood test that your child has this disease and they're likely not going to have a good quality of life, whatever that disease was, and that was described for them. And many of them would go on without having additional testing because they didn't understand that these blood tests were so often wrong. So this article is very helpful in exposing that problem. And they would go to have an abortion right away, not wanting to deal with those issues. And it's important for us to remember that from a Christian perspective, from the biblical perspective, we have to look at that in an entirely different way, as Rob was saying. We have to recognize that even those individuals with disabilities are made in the image of God. We don't understand why God does those things, but we look at passages like Exodus 4, that God says he's made man to have a mute mouth and deaf ears and those things very clearly. Yeah. We don't understand, but we do know that those things are all products of the fall and the curse.
We still live in the fallen world.
Technically, since the fall, we're all somehow...
I'm pretty sure we could all find some genetic defects.
We all have some little small defects, and it's really by what standard. They always say that the child could have a poor life, but really by what standard.
Yeah, and most of the time when they go on to do those other tests where they'll do... chorionic villi sampling or an amniocentesis to check for those things, they don't have the disorder. And then, or if the baby's born, they are healthy. Yeah. So this is just a reminder to us as Christians, as we encounter women who are facing these issues, and even families, men are involved in these things as well, that we can be counseling them, hey, let's don't jump to conclusions, let's slow down and think about this, let's trust God in this situation.
Bring up the gospel, why that child is made in the image of God, and then bring it back to Jesus. Jesus created that child because Jesus redeemed our entire universe, and that, and they need that heart change.
Yeah, I know a family that, you know, this was their fourth child, and they just kept telling them, no, according to this test, you know, this child's going to have a problem, you know, and they kept encouraging them to abort, and they're like, no, they were a good Christian family. And they had the child was just fine.
Exactly.
There was no problem.
Yeah, you hear a lot of stories about that over and over and over again. And you might be thinking, why are we spending so much time on this? It's because abortion is the number one issue plaguing our world today. I was looking it up earlier. Nearly 43 million children were killed worldwide in 2021 just from abortion. That's how many innocent lives, innocent children were slaughtered. That doesn't compare even close to some of the other causes, like 13 million die from diseases from last year, 8.2 million from cancer, 5 million from smoking. So, I mean, it's 10 times worse.
Oh, it dwarfs it,
And that's only probably only including the surgical abortions as well. We're not even talking about chemical abortions that are probably even far more
popular now, sadly.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to see, for sure.
Yep.
All right, our next article takes us to Evolution News and Science Today. Woke comes back to bite the Darwinists. So here we have a description of Jerry Coyne, who's a popular writer, a Darwinist, and you might recognize his name. And he has written many books and been among the popular Darwinist popularizers. And he has often spoken out against the intelligent design movement. Now, as a ministry, we would distinguish ourselves from intelligent design proponents who leave God out of the picture. We want very clearly to make the God of the Bible, Jesus Christ, as the creator. We don't leave him out of the picture. Absolutely. And but here we have an example of Jerry Coyne would promote these ideas of Darwinism, and then when evolutionists would try to put themselves into these arguments against the intelligent design movement, for example, Eric Hedden, who was a professor at Ball State, tried to promote thinking about intelligent design in his courses at Ball State University. Jerry Coyne came out against him very hard, and he fought against him and tried to get him fired for his views because he said, you can't have those ideas of an intelligent designer in science. That's anti-science because you're bringing a religious viewpoint into these things. And he tried to shut him down. And it's another example of kind of the cancel culture idea.
And yet at the same time, Coyne was promoting his religion.
Right.
Being pro-secular,
not being neutral, by the way.
Evolutionary. Atheistic worldview, which is a religion.
Yeah, neutrality is a myth. That. A lot of these people, they try to say we're just trying to be neutral, but really, if we look at it biblically, there is no such thing as neutrality.
There is no neutral. Yep.
And just think about the irony of the whole thing. I mean, it just...
Right. And now all of a sudden, you know, we see the woke culture having to go with the Darwinists, having to go with Darwin himself even, to a certain degree. But
It says the woke thugs are going after ... Darwinists and paleontologists.
That's right. Yeah, and they were talking about E.O. Wilson here being attacked in the Scientific American. And they're kind of shocked and surprised. No, you're not supposed to go after our group is really what they're trying to say. You know, that the atheists are trying to say, hey, don't come after our group. Well, they're coming after your group. And so it just goes to show that, you know, even from their own philosophy, it would self-destruct.
Worldviews have consequences, And any worldview that's not founded on the Bible, not founded on God's word, will ultimately self-destruct itself. It always comes right back, and this is what we're seeing today. Yeah. And for those that aren't familiar with what is woke, what is this wokeism you guys are talking about? It's basically the idea that you're woke to your oppressor, your oppressed status, you know, if you're white versus non-white in regards to the social justice movement that you hear today. And it's actually really a form of Gnosticism. It's like this secret knowledge that you kind of have. Vodi Bakum actually has a really great talk on it. He even has a book on it called Fault Lines, if you guys want to check it out. Basically, he boils it down to there's really just two races. You're either in Adam, you're fallen Adam, or you're in Christ. You know, those are really the only two options we have, because we all come back to the same human race. There's only one human race, so there really is no racism. We have different ethnicities, of course, but we all go back to Adam and Eve. We're one race, one blood, and we have a lot of good resources on that as well, talking about one race, one blood.
So now, as Coin is getting canceled by those who would be fighting against the obvious racist attitudes that Darwinism promotes, even though many Darwinists would claim they're not racist, the philosophy of Darwinism is inherently racist.
Like in his Descent of Man, right? He talks about the non-white people being lower races, right? And they're talking about women being lower races, closer to the apes, the ape-like ancestors. Mm-hmm. And so it's exactly what it's coming right back around on top of them.
Yeah, we're seeing that.
Yeah.
All right. And California drops Aztec prayers from ethnic studies curriculum after parents file suit. Now, you might think, what in the world's going on here?
Right, well, we've talked about this. Yeah.
More news in California.
We keep seeing these stories coming up over and over of curriculum that are introducing ethnic studies curriculum, especially, and lots of other social studies type curricula that are promoting these different views of different ethnic cultures, and saying that whiteness has pushed out all these other gods, and that there's this idea of theocide. The white culture has come into the into this part of the world and pushed out and killed all the other deities, and they're trying to reclaim those things. So here, California has adopted this in the school district. They've adopted these ideas into the curriculum, where they're actually introducing prayers into the curriculum to these Aztec gods. Now, it's not just being taught as culture.
Yeah, there's, I mean,
it's being taught as in a way to affirm these things.
They talk about it clearly in the article. They're talking about seeking blessings from and the intercession of these demonic forces, because really, in Ephesians chapter 6, we read about it. We're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but the spiritual forces of evil. So, and a lot of these sources, they're trying to invoke power, knowledge, assistance, and giving thanks to them, you know. So from a biblical worldview, this is not something we want to condone at all.
Now, as a result of the lawsuit that was filed against them, they decided to remove those religious chants from the to the Aztec gods from their ethnic studies curriculum. But, you know, I find it interesting that evolutionary humanism, atheism, that sort of thing, is still freely taught in there.
Yeah,
so they'll pull that aspect of the religion out, but they're not going to pull.
We're talking like Big Bang, millions of years, evolution.
Right.
And you mean it's not religiously neutral in the public school system?
Oh, no,
not at all. They're not neutral.
And kids are
They just basically kick out all of the religions that are not secular humanism so they can hold on to that one. That's really what it comes down to. So we're not saying, to avoid the public school system, but to really be aware if you are sending your kids to these school systems at the state, be aware these are some of the things that they could encounter. Just heads up.
I would suggest Christians should want their children to have a Christian education, you know, whether it's a good Christian school like 12 Stones Christian Academy, associated with AIG, or another local Christian school that stands on the authority of the Word of God, good biblical worldview.
You got to be careful with those Christian private schools out there, because a lot of them are sacrificing on biblical authority.
Like
12 Stones, for example, is a great one. They stand on biblical authority in all aspects of life.
Right. Well, it's interesting, you know, these last couple of news items, you know, we've dealt with the Aztecs, secular humanism, atheistic materialism, and so forth. We actually have a book series here, World Religions and Cults. Roger and I were actually the general editors. But we actually work with experts from five different continents to write and review this book series. It's an amazing book set to really deal with all sorts of different religions. And even though we may not have a whole chapter on Aztec religions, you can see its fingerprint on
some of the animistic religions.
Yeah, and the animistic religions and so forth. So.
Marty notes, that's why I like Answers in Genesis when they say that our skin is brown, because we are all one blood and one people group on this planet.
So
this is white, by the way. Okay, we're not actually white. This is white.
Yeah.
We're all just different shades of brown, like that comment was saying. That's exactly right.
All right, this one's fun for me. Newly discovered fossil could be the answer to Darwin's abominable mystery. So Darwin recognized that there was this problem in the fossil record with plants. There's a big issue with where plants are in the fossil record as regards to where flowering plants occur. And that's been a common issue that pops up in the textbooks that I mm-hmm. taught from when I was teaching in the high schools and public mm-hmm. system. And the flowering plants occur and they diversify way too rapidly. And this has been a known problem, and it's part of the enigma, as it's called in various places. And how does this happen? And mm-hmm. we've been looking at the fossils as a scientific community and trying to understand all these pieces, and we can't figure it out. And how do we resolve this? And here in this article, we've got an example of what could be the oldest bud. So you see here in the picture, the image here, and here's a different view of it.
Thanks, bud.
What's very interesting about this is we have what we would call a perfect flower. It's got all the structures here. You can see off of one branch, you can see the stem. The top right picture there shows a close-up mm-hmm. of the fruit. And then the bottom right picture shows the bud. And inside of that bud, we can see what appears to be the flowering structures yeah. with the all of the male and female flower parts there that mm-hmm. make it a perfect flower. It's got the sepals, the little base parts that come off of there. Now, there's debate in the community. This is a new fossil. Is this an angiosperm or a gymnosperm? Mm-hmm. Looking at it and the things I've been able to see online looks pretty much like a true flower to me. Yeah. So this pushes things back in the evolutionary story again.
Oh,
we hear
yeah.
this all the time.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, you hear it
every week. Rewrites
the
evolutionary story by 20 million years.
You say these results demand a rethinking of angiosperm evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything you ever knew about flowering plants has now switched.
Right.
But, you know, I remember growing up, you know, and there were times I'd see all these old dinosaur images and so forth, and they wouldn't have grass or flowering plants because mm-hmm. of some of this worldview issue. A lot of that stuff's changing. I mean, we even have pollen long before this time, you know, but of course people want to debate over that, but we find that in the fossil record. Yeah. From a biblical perspective, these things are buried in the flood.
Yeah.
They're all laid down at that time. Flowering plants were actually made before dinosaurs. You know, they're made on day three. Dinosaurs are made on day six.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, when you think about that, you know, this makes perfect sense.
This is what happens when you have a wrong starting point. You're going to get the wrong conclusions, and that's why they're so puzzled. That's why they can't quite figure all of this out. Yeah. And you think about the dumb luck, because they say because flowers are such delicate structures, yet you know they're still well preserved, and they can't figure out why are these still we have these amazing fossils that we can still see that are clearly flowers. It's mm-hmm. because they're not that old. That's really what it comes down mm-hmm. to. And
all right, I think we got time to sneak in one more article here.
Yeah.
Unusual team finds gigantic planet hidden in plain sight. Mm-hmm. So what we have here is an example of
possibly.
Yeah. Scanning the skies looking for exoplanets. Now, exoplanets are planets outside of our solar system. Mm-hmm. And this one, I believe, was 239 light years away.
So 379.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Light years, which is considered close for an exoplanet.
Pretty close for an exoplanet.
Relatively.
And it's pretty large. It's Earth size, and it's pretty massive. It's
the size of Jupiter, the mm-hmm. same diameter as Jupiter, mm-hmm. nearly three times more massive, though. Yep.
Lots more massive. And the people at NASA and other astronomers are looking for these things because they're trying to find Earth-like planets so that they can find life. And that's the ultimate goal.
That's the evolutionary goal.
So they have,
and this isn't a candidate for that, even based on what they've
done. No, not even based on that. But still, finding these planets is a very interesting technique. So they're basically using this test telescope, and they'll scan, and they'll look at stars, and they'll see a dimming of the light, and that's the possibility there is that a planet is passing in front of it and dimming.
Mm-hmm. Dimming
and
so of the star, basically. There. You have mm-hmm. a planet orbiting around the star, and every time it goes across a star, there's a small dip. And they're also looking at the gravitational tug as well. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're able to determine how heavy these planets are, because we can't really take these planets, throw them on scales like we do on Earth, right? So they have to figure out how heavy these things are, how massive they are.
Because we just put Earth on a scale.
Yeah, of course, right? So that's kind of what they're looking for. There's a direct proportion between the amount of mass, not weight, but the amount of mass that the planet has and the gravitational tug of the objects around it. So that's what they're kind of looking for. And a lot of these so-called amateur astronomers actually notice this. And there's only one transit that they've seen, though. Typically, a rule of thumb is we like to see three transits mm-hmm. of the planet around that star before we actually conclusively say, yeah, that's a planet. They've only seen one so far, but they're hoping to see more, basically saying that this could be a planet that we want to look at and study.
And now that you've got a candidate, you know where to point the telescope next time. You're not just randomly pointing at somewhere looking for something. And so they've missed it earlier this year, and they're hoping to find it again. I think in August was the next.
February, they're saying next month they're estimating this planet will transit star again. So they're hoping for a follow-up study based on the results from that.
So the researchers will be looking forward to it. They're light years ahead of everyone else just waiting for it.
Just like, you're on the roll today.
I don't know about that.
All right, that's all the time we've got for Answers News today. We will see you again on Monday. God bless.
God bless. God bless you guys. Have a great day.